We have been, over the last few weeks, I told you the elders had asked me to address the concept of marriage and marriage, divorce, remarriage, that idea. And we spent the first two lessons looking at how we can be the right husbands or how we can be the right wives, and what type of husband or wife to look for when we're considering somebody to marry. Today I want to jump into that other one that we hear so much about and we talk about. It is the idea of adultery. In the passage that was read for us, I didn't have all of it read. It actually goes through verse 23 there in Proverbs chapter 5. But what I want you to understand is that as you look at the book of Proverbs, early on in Solomon's discourses that he has on wisdom, he warns about being delivered from an immoral woman. He tells us some things about this person. In chapter 2 and verse 16, he tells us that this is a person, a seductress who flatters with her words. In verse 17 of that same chapter, he tells us this is a person who leaves her husband and who forgets her covenant with her God. In the same chapter, in verses 18 and 19, he tells us that her home and paths lead to death. And so he warns against getting caught up in such similar situations. We find similar warnings often repeated in the discourses. If you go to chapters, well, we read chapter 5, but if you also look at chapter 6 and chapter 7, you find Solomon repeating many of the same things. Why? Well, oftentimes when you read something in Scripture and it's repeated over and over again, it's like our parents saying something to us as a way of warning. The more they say it, the more we understand. This is something I need to pay attention to. This is something I need to listen to. And so it is with Solomon. He repeats it because the danger is great, and we need to be aware of it. It's a serious problem. It was in Solomon's day, and it hasn't changed today. I was telling the Bible class that I teach upstairs, I read an article in a particular publication that I receive. And he was talking about, it was an article about one particular congressman who has left his post and gone home to try to repair his 35-year marriage to his wife because of an adulterous relationship, an affair with a part of his staff. And it went on to talk about how so many of our congressmen and senators find themselves caught up in affairs and why it is so prevalent in Washington. And it talked about how oftentimes they move to Washington while their families stay at home. And one person, Senator Dan Quayle, or at that time Vice President Dan Quayle, recommended to this particular individual that he bring his family with him to Washington. He said, "I wish I'd listened." Because Vice President Quayle learned and taught, tried to teach others, you're safer when your family is around you. But all of that being said, I want to look at, in chapter 5, some things that Solomon has to say about adultery. He talks about the promise, first of all, that adultery tends to make. And there is a false promise that adultery makes, and then there's the real promise of what we can expect as a result of it. But first of all, if you consider the false promise, Satan is very good at lying. He has become so adept at it that he convinces us that he's telling us the truth, and that we do well to listen to him. And that's exactly what Solomon says here. If you go back and notice chapter 5, there in verse 3, we find that when you listen to the promise of adultery, it sounds great at first. Because here, Solomon says, the lips of an adulteress drip honey, and smoother than oil is her speech. Sounds good. Sounds good. Not only that, it involves flattery. There's enticement there. And it's not just in one verse we find that. We find it in chapter 2, verse 16, where he says that the adulteress flatters with her words. In chapter 6, there in verse 24, he makes the statement that he talks about the smooth tongue of the adulteress. And in chapter 7, there in verse 21, he again talks about how with her many persuasions, she entices him, and with her flattering lips, she seduces him. So it's flattering. And men, don't we like to be flattered? Don't we like someone to tell us that we're worthwhile and that we're special? We all like that. But for some reason, it tends to feed our egos, men, more than it does maybe the ladies. Satan has used that tool for a long time. Because if you go back to Genesis chapter 3, you find there that even with the forbidden fruit, it was tempting. It was tempting to Eve. Because she saw that it would give pleasure. It would make one wise. It would taste good. That's why she partook. Adultery promises a lot. But what does it deliver? You need to understand that the real promise of adultery is what we find just one verse later in chapter 5. It's verse 4. He says the end of adultery there is sharp bitterness. In the end, she is bitter as wormwood, sharp as a two-edged sword. I know one man that I'm familiar with. This has been many years ago. That tried to break it off with an extramarital affair with a woman. And I remember one time him having taken his children and his wife in an effort to repair that relationship to Montgomery Bell State Park to spend some time with them. When he got back home, this woman had come to his house. She had taken a key and she had keyed the side of his brand new truck. She had taken her knife, and she had cut the seats of his motorcycle and the boys' two motorcycles. She had taken a rock and thrown it through the back door. It was all her way of saying, "You're not going to walk away from me that easily. You need to understand that." And eventually he went back to that woman and it cost him his marriage. You see, she's bitter because of that. That's the reality. The real promise is that there is death and it is followed by condemnation. In verse 5 of chapter 5 there in Proverbs, we find her feet go down to death. Her steps take hold of Sheol, or as the King James translates it, hell. And so it is that the ways of the adulteress are unstable. They're unknowable. She does not ponder the path of life or success. Her ways are unstable. She doesn't know it. Adultery delivers, but it doesn't deliver what it promises. As I've heard one preacher say, and I used this in a class upstairs years ago, the grass looks greener on the other side of the fence, but guys, the truth is, the grass is going to have to be mowed at some point. And it's not what it always appears to be. It may look good for the moment, but eventually it brings about certain things. So here's the real issue, and this is where I want us to spend the bulk of our time this morning. What is the price of adultery? What does it really cost us? Well, first of all, we need to understand it's going to cost us our wealth. I've seen this too many times. Solomon pleads with his children to stay away from the immoral woman. In verses 7 and 8, Billy read for us, he says, "Now my sons, listen to me, and do not depart from the words of my mouth. Keep your way far from her, and do not go near the door of her house." Why? Well, if you look at what he says in the first part of verse 9, it's this. The New King James says, "Lest you give your honor to others." Just go ahead and give away what you've got. Or, if you'll notice later in verse 10, just one verse later, and the English Standard Version has a good translation of this. It is translated, "Lest strangers take their fill of your wealth and your neighbors go to the house of a foreigner." I think most of us who have any family members that have gone through a divorce, we understand what alimony and child support is. And we see individuals that make a choice to walk away from their families and they end up paying alimony and child support. Costs a lot to maintain two families. Especially when you fulfill your responsibility to your first family. I can remember one time sitting with another individual in the courthouse down in Hornwall, Tennessee, and they brought out a man who had missed several payments on child support and alimony. He was a few months behind. And he went before the judge and had some excuse. And the judge said, "Well, we'll just let you sit in jail for a few days." And I think he put him in jail for 30 days. And I talked to the lawyer later, and he said, "Yeah, he'll put him in jail, then he'll let him out and give him a chance to pay it. If he doesn't pay it, he'll put him back in jail." That's the real promise. That's the real promise. It'll cost you your wealth. It'll not only cost you your wealth, it'll cost you your physical health. Solomon had another reason here. If you notice the latter part of verse 9, he says, and your years to the cruel one, or to the merciless one. And he adds something in verse 11. At the end of your life you groan when your flesh and your body are consumed. How many people have contracted some type of bacterial STD, sexually transmitted disease, because of immorality? How many people have contracted some type of viral STD, sexually transmitted disease, which, by the way, is incurable? You may be able to control it, some of them, but it's not curable. All because of a choice. And some of us know women who now are carriers of that because their husband was unfaithful and then brought it home to his wife. So folks, there is a price to adultery. Sexually transmitted diseases can eat away at the physical body. And all of that can be prevented if we are faithful to the spouse that we committed to at the beginning of our marriage. If we will remain true to that person and that person alone. It cost us our wealth, it will cost us our physical health, but it will also cost us our mental health. You'll be filled with self-recrimination. In Proverbs chapter 5, look down in verse 12. Solomon says, how I hated instruction, and my heart despised correction. I have not obeyed the voice of my teachers, nor inclined my ear to those who instructed me. How many times have you gone to someone and you've said, listen, what you're doing is wrong. Listen, you need to walk away from that. You need to come back to your husband. You need to come back to your wife. You need to be faithful to them. And they said, don't tell me how to live my life. Don't tell me what to do with my life. I don't want to hear what you've got to say. How many times have we seen people in the church who, rather than be confronted with their sin, will just say, well, I'll go somewhere else and worship. But I'm not going to attend there because I don't want somebody telling me that I'm wrong. Folks, I preached at a congregation where an elder son walked away from his wife. And a year later, our treasurer walked away from his wife. You know what that does to a congregation? It's like taking the wind out of the sails. And no effort that was put forth could change their minds. The two children of that first man, I have come to know and love very dearly. They had the fortune of having an uncle who stepped in and kind of became a father figure for them until he died from cancer 2 years ago. And when he died, it was like losing their real father because he had been the real father that they had missed. So what I'm saying to you is, I've seen people that you try to talk to and it's like, I don't want to hear what you've got to say. I'm going to do what I want to do. It messes with us mentally. It'll cost us our mental health. And we won't forget what our parents or our teachers or preachers or true friends really tried to tell us. It'll stay with us for a long time. You know, when you recall the violent effects of divorce on a spouse or on your children, if you're part of that, who will likely suffer worse, you'll stop and you'll think, why did I do that? I have a book in my office, and I've mentioned it several times from this pulpit, called The 25 Years of Divorce. It looks at children over a 25-year study and what divorce does to children, how it damages them, how they struggle to ever really get a handle on life. So it does cost the children. Your conscience can eat away your peace of mind. But then finally, it will cost you your reputation. In Proverbs chapter 5, there in verse 14, the New King James translates it this way. It says, I was on the verge of total ruin in the midst of the assembly and the congregation. Now, I want you to think about something. Truly, people do not take lightly the sin of adultery. I want you to notice another passage. It's in chapter Proverbs 6. And I want you to listen to what Solomon says here to this person, this young man that he's trying to instruct. Here's what he says. He says, can a man take fire in his bosom and his clothes not be burned? Or can a man walk on hot coals and his feet not be scorched? so is the one who goes into his neighbor's wife. Whoever touches her will not go unpunished. Man do not despise a thief if he steals to satisfy himself when he is hungry. But when he is found, he must repay sevenfold. He must give all the substance of his house. The one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He would destroy himself does it. Wounds and disgrace he will find, and his reproach will not be blotted out. For jealousy enrages a man, and he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not accept any ransom, nor will he be satisfied, though you give many gifts. You ever seen a man who somebody has taken his wife from him? You want to see anger? Look at that man. I've known of situations where men have gone after other men because of an adulterous affair that somebody had with their wife. Folks, I want you to understand, the sin of adultery is not something we should take lightly. And let me ask you another question. Can you trust somebody who would lie to their own spouse? I'm not doing anything. No, I was just out at the office a little later last night. You see, what we don't understand, folks, is that the reason adultery is so hard to overcome within a marriage is because it destroys something that's very sacred within the relationship, and that is trust. Our wives trust us, men. When we destroy that trust, it's very difficult to ever get it back. I had a man come in my office one time years ago. He said, "Jeff, I'm doing everything you said. I'm calling her. I'm letting her know that I'm on my way home, and I do everything I've told her I'm going to do. But it's so hard. She just still doesn't trust me." I had to tell him it may take a long time to get that back. A long time. And so it is, our unfaithfulness can eat away our reputation. It destroys our wealth, our body, our soul, our reputation. But forgiveness is possible. It is possible. And so here is where I want to finish the lesson this morning. How do we prevent adultery? Because folks, that's the goal. If we are going to be God's people in God's church, the real question is, how do we keep it from happening in the first place? How do we prevent it? How do we overcome it? How do we make sure that it doesn't happen in our home? Well, number one, we have to love our spouse. Love that person that you said, "I do too." Love that person that you said, "Will you marry me?" Love them. I'm reminded of a song so long ago from Camelot. How do you handle a woman? Simply love her. Love her. Love her. That's what King Arthur's saying. Now, I know you can come back and tell me, but you forget about Sir Lancelot, and I remember that too. But Arthur loved Guinevere. Love your wife. Rejoice in the wife of your youth. That's what Solomon tells us, being raptured by her love. In Proverbs chapter 5, verses 15 through 19, he brings out how we need to love our wives. And we've looked at that in one of our previous lessons. But I want to draw your minds to another passage too. It's Ecclesiastes chapter 9, then verse 9. And here's what Solomon says. He says, "Enjoy life with the woman with whom you love all the days of your fleeting life, which is given you under the sun. For this is your reward in life, and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun." Enjoy life with that person. Revel in it. Spend time together. Cherish one another. You know what Paul said, men? He said, "Husbands, love your wives even as Christ loved the church." In Ephesians chapter 5, in two verses there, in 25 and 28, he says, "Husbands, love your wives just as Christ also loved the church and gave himself up for her." How much are we willing to give up for our wives? In verse 28, he says, "Husbands ought to also love their wives, even as their own bodies." He says, "He who loves his wife loves himself." How much do you love yourself, men? Do you love your wife as much or more? Because you demonstrate how much you really love you by the way you respond to your wives. And wives, you know what Paul instructed Titus to teach the older women, to teach the younger women? He said, "Older women likewise are to be reverent in their behavior, not malicious gossips or enslaved to much wine." And now notice this, "teaching what is good so that they may encourage the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. Why would we be enraptured by an adulteress or an adulterer and a seductress or a seducer? In Proverbs chapter 5, there in verse 20, Solomon asked a question. He says, "For why should you, my son, be exhilarated with an adulteress and embrace the bosom of a foreigner?" Our true character is revealed by our immorality. If we commit adultery with one person, we're likely to commit adultery with another. Ladies, if a man will commit adultery with you, what's to keep him from committing adultery against you with another woman? You see, God commands us to have that enraptured love with that person that we married. It's a love that can be learned, and it's also a love that can be relearned. So first of all, love your spouse, but secondly, love the Lord. Love the Lord. God is omniscient. That means He knows everything. You may hide it from me, you may hide it from the elders, you may even hide it from your wife and your children, but the one person you will not hide it from is God. Sins have their effect. In Proverbs chapter 5, there in verse 21, he says, "For the ways of a man are before the eyes of the Lord, and he watches all of his paths. His own iniquities will capture the wicked, and he will be held with the cords of his sin. He will die for lack of instruction, and in the greatness of his folly, he will go astray." God sees all. Solomon said in Proverbs 15, verse 3, he says, "The eyes of the Lord are in every place, watching the evil and the good." God watches. And because God watches, he judges. If you look at what the writer to the Hebrews said, if you come to Hebrews chapter 13, there in verse 4, he said that marriage is to be held in honor among all men. And the marriage bed is to be undefiled. Fornicators and adulterers God will judge. So when a person sins against the Lord, know that those sins will eventually be exposed, if not in this life, at least in the life to come. As Moses said long ago in Numbers 32, verse 23, be sure your sins will find you out. Eventually they will. Isn't it much better to be to love God, to be loyal to Him? Because that's what He's looking for. He's looking for people who are loyal to Him. As the chronicler said in 2 Chronicles chapter 16, verse 9, he says, "The eyes of the Lord move to and fro throughout the earth, that He may strongly support those whose heart is completely His." God is looking for those who are faithful. And Matthew records Jesus saying the same thing almost. Matthew 22, there in verse 37. He says simply, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind." So it is that when we're devoted to God, it prevents us from doing that which is wrong against our fellow man. Remember what Joseph said when Potiphar's wife tried to seduce him? There in Genesis chapter 39, if you can read all of it, but verses 7 through 10, but specifically, I want you to notice what he says. He says, "Behold, with me my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. He has put all that he owns within my charge." And listen to what he says in verse 10. "There's no one greater than this in the house." Actually, verse 8. "There's no one greater than this in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife." Now I want you to hear what he says. "How then could I do this great evil and sin against God?" His love for God was so great, he said, "I can't do this because it's a sin against God, and I won't do that." You know what? Because Joseph was faithful to God, God blessed him. God blessed him. Because if you look just a few verses later, after his imprisonment in verse 21 of Genesis 39, we find that the Lord was with Joseph and extended kindness to him. And gave him favor in the sight of the chief jailer, so he elevated him. And then later, when we look down in Genesis 41, we find that as he has two children, Ephraim and Manasseh, when Manasseh, his firstborn, came along, he named him Manasseh because he says, "God has made me forget all my troubles." When Ephraim was born, he says, God, he named him Ephraim because he said, "God has made me fruitful." God blessed him because he was faithful to God. So what am I saying? As we conclude the lesson this morning, I want you to understand this. The promise of adultery is deceptive. It promises pleasure, but what it delivers is death and condemnation. The price of adultery is terrible. We've seen that. Too many learn too late by their own experiences, and everybody could avoid if they would simply follow God's word. But finally, the prevention of adultery is possible. That is, if love is in our hearts and in the right place, we've got to love God with all of our heart, and we've got to love our spouses with God's blessings. I ask you this morning, as you examine your own life, and I know our lesson has been primarily about adultery, but you know, there's another type of adultery that we don't often talk about. It's called spiritual adultery. It's where we choose other things over God after we have committed to Him. When we are baptized, when we acknowledge that we want to become Christians and we want to serve Him for the rest of our days, and then we decide that we're going to do something else, we're going to follow other things, that's spiritual adultery, and we need to come back to God. Or maybe we've never even made the commitment to start with. We've never said, I believe that Jesus is your Son, and I want to change my life, and I want to put Him on in baptism, and I want to live for you all the days you give me. If you need to make those responses, if you need to come forward today, we invite you to do so as together we stand and sing.